WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Hubert Selby Jr. has a new novel called The Willow Tree, which will be published later this month. On this archive edition, we have a 1988 interview with him. Selby is best known for his 1964 novel, Last Exit to Brooklyn, about hoodlums, hookers, drug addicts, and transvestites. When we spoke, the movie adaptation was in production. The characters in the novel were brutal, their stories hopeless. Selby said he was trying to portray the horrors of a loveless world. Although the novel is now considered an urban classic, it was shocking and controversial when it was published. It was the subject of a major obscenity trial in England and was banned in Italy. In America, an editor was arrested for having published one of Selby's stories. Last Exit to Brooklyn is set in the slums around Brooklyn's waterfront, where Selby hung out in 1949.
Well, it was at the time as the New York port of embarkation. They used to call it the Brooklyn Army Base. And it subsequently has been closed, and it's now being turned into office space. But that operated all through the Second War and the Korean War. And tons of troops and material and equipment was shipped from the Army base overseas to Europe. And, of course, there was a lot of Navy personnel there as well. And it was like any neighborhood waterfront area, there's a lot of violence, just an incredible amount of violence.
I think one of the best-known characters from your novel is Georgette, who you describe as a hip queer. He's a homosexual, but often dresses in drag and is described as a she in the book. Who is the character based on?
Well, there was a young guy named Georgie that lived in the neighborhood. And I didn't understand my relationship to Georgie at the time, but I realized subsequently that I had a very deep and profound affection and compassion for Georgie. And in a very real way, Georgie was responsible for my writing the book. And that came about to anticipate a question. I wrote the first part of a section of Last Exit called The Queen is Dead. I wrote the first part of that story, and I called it Love's Labor's Lost, and that was published in the Black Mountain Review. And a year or two later, I met someone from the neighborhood, and they said Georgie had been found dead in the streets, literally in the gutter, and evidently died of an OD. And as I said, I didn't understand the emotions behind this at the time, but I knew I had to finish the story. I could not allow Georgie to have died, especially such a humiliating death, without doing something for him. I had to give him a life, I had to dignify his life in some way. And I mean dignify, not romanticize. And so I finished his story, and as I was doing that, the concept for the book developed. So in a very real way, Georgie was responsible for my writing Last Exit to Brooklyn. And when they suggested I play the role of the car driver in the movie that hits Georgette and kills her, it just seemed absolutely perfect for me because, and it seemed poetic too, that I would be, in a sense, killing Georgie when I brought Georgie to life in the book and then subsequently on the screen, and that finally, hopefully, Georgie can be put to rest and find the dignity that all life deserves.
Did any readers assume that you were either gay or a transvestite after reading either the story The Queen is Dead or Last Exit to Brooklyn?
As I understand it, most people assumed I was gay. And also, a friend of mine told me a very interesting story. He was talking with a black friend of his, and he said that this friend of his assumed I was black because I had depicted black people so well. So I guess I'm a black, gay, homosexual queen or something.
I had heard from someone that your publishers wanted you to
pose with your wife just so readers would know he's not a homosexual.
Oh, that's right. I'd forgotten about that. I think somebody interviewed me and suggested that we do that, have a picture in whatever magazine that was. And if I remember correctly, I said, no, that gay people buy books. Let's not scare them off. I'd forgotten that. That's true.
So they went for that, huh?
Well, whatever. I mean, I don't know, but they went for it or not.
Hubert Selby Jr. is my guest, and I want to ask you, now that I'm reintroducing you by name, your nickname is Cubby.
Correct.
How did you get the name?
Well, I'm not sure, but when you have a name like Hubert, and you're playing on the streets of Brooklyn with Vinny and Mikey and Tony, and they look at you and say, Hubert, Hubert. You know, you have to do something to survive. And at one point when I was maybe 10 years old, in that area, someplace, I was on a team called the Bear Cubs. And the only connection I can see between the nickname Cubby and some event in my life is that. So maybe from that came the name Cubby. I don't know, but I am eternally grateful. And maybe the only reason I survived my childhood was eventually I got to be called Cubby instead of Hubert.
Hmm. How did you start to write? You dropped out of high school.
Well, I don't know if I went to high school.
Oh, really?
Well, I did finish the ninth grade. I guess that's high school.
Neighborhood, it was junior high.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, I left at 15. I started to write because I was taken off a ship in Germany when I was 18. They said I couldn't live more than 2 months. And I've been given up for dead many times. And I just didn't want to waste my life. I had what I now realize was a spiritual experience. And what happened was I knew that someday I would die. And just before I died, two things would happen. Number one, I would regret my entire life. And number two, I would want to live my life over again, and then I would die. And that terrified me. As I say, it was a spiritual experience. And you know, as you know, those experiences are far more profound than any experience we can have at this level of consciousness. And to think that I would live my entire life, look at it, and say, oh, I blew it, was such a terrifying thought that I bought a typewriter. I didn't know what I was going to do with it, but I bought a typewriter because I had no ideas or anything else. But that is what got me to start writing, was I did not want to waste my life. I wanted to, and I had to do something with my life.
So you dropped out of school when you were 15 and you went to work on the waterfront. Why did you drop out?
I was as restless, irritable, and discontent. I couldn't stand it. I just couldn't stand it. And I also knew I could never succeed in school. It terrified me. I knew I didn't have whatever it takes to go to school. And in many ways, that's true, I didn't. I couldn't do it. I had to go. I had to go.
So you went and you worked on the waterfront. What was the experience like for you, and were you exposed to the kind of violence and corruption that you've written about?
Not really. I wasn't. It was a job. You know, I worked on tugboats. I worked on launches. I worked on dredges, and then I went to sea on Liberty ships. And I wasn't exposed to it in that sense. And I loved it. I've always wanted to go to sea. If I hadn't gotten sick, I might still be going to sea. I just loved it. I loved everything about the water.
Well, when you were 18, you signed on to a freighter, and that's when you got tuberculosis, right?
Well, actually, I had been sailing on freighters for a couple of years at that point.
I see.
I started, I guess I was 15 or 16 the first time I sailed to Europe. And it was just after my 18th birthday when I was taken off the ship. In Germany.
With tuberculosis.
Correct.
Now, if I have this straight, the therapy that they used for you, because you were very sick, was the doctors deflated one lung, took out part of your other lung, and then removed 10 ribs. Why did they remove 10 ribs?
Well, they cut 8 ribs out on one side to collapse that lung permanently. And they cut a couple of ribs out on the other side to cut the piece out of the lung. And they had used an experimental drug to keep me alive, and that impaired my vision and my hearing, and my inner ear was almost totally destroyed, and I couldn't walk. I'd fall down, and all my muscles were petrified from the drug, so it was kind of a mess.
You got hooked on morphine from the hospitalization experience after the TB and the surgery?
Mm-hmm.
Were there any medical precautions that were taken, you know, so that you wouldn't get hooked?
Well, you can't prevent it, but, I mean, I didn't leave the hospital physically addicted. I just fell in love with the stuff when I got it in the hospital and eventually found it on the streets.
How did you kick?
Oh, it was really very simple. I got arrested and they strapped me down in solitary and I kicked my habit.
So you kicked in prison?
Not prison, just a jail, county jail.
Still must have been pretty excruciating.
Well, it was very unpleasant.
Was anybody kind to you while you were there?
Yeah, nobody was unkind. The system, of course, is a drag, but there was nobody was nasty to me or anything. And again, you know, I just kind of have a way of finding the biggest, strongest murderer and becoming friends with him, and nobody bothers me.
Really? Is that the trick?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's the technique?
I'm not sure. It's just some inner thing of survival that allows me to kind of smile the right smile and talk the right talk. I have a way of knowing what goes on inside of people, and I can appeal to that.
Is this something that you've done not only in prison but outside of prison, you know, to kind of get the right protection?
Oh, well, not consciously always to get the protection, but to talk with people with their language about their life, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because that makes people comfortable, and they respond. They respond to you.
Well, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Hubert Selby Jr. recorded in 1988. His new novel, The Willow Tree, will be published later this month.